Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And good morning, Nashville. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson taking care of us behind the glass. Let's continue our discussion on college football. We have Mike Golic Jr. of ESPN joining us right now. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking the time to join us. So, college football, we've been discussing all morning just about players having a voice, and we are seeing this so much on Twitter right now of college football players standing up, being leaders right now, and whether we agree with what they say or not, they are actually showing they have a voice with a lot of support. What is your opinion on this and these players standing up for what they believe in right now?
I love it. I'm excited to see a lot of new people entering this party of believing that the players deserve a voice and that we should listen and entertain their thoughts and opinions on a lot of this stuff. I hope the people that have joined recently will stay with us when those players start asking for uncomfortable things like, you know, Black Lives to Matter and for maybe a cut of the revenue eventually or any of the other things associated with name, image, and likeness that tend to make people a little more uncomfortable and that tend to have people call players greedy and say that they should, you know, just enjoy their scholarship and go about business as usual. So I am cautiously optimistic that maybe this is a turning point and people are seeing that these players know and are capable of a lot more than they are giving them credit for, and I'm hoping this is not a crime of convenience.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. It certainly seems to be a shift for some people to, nope, you're good, you should be happy to listen to these guys. But look, a lot of these players are outspoken, are saying they want to play. We still appear to be here on the absolute precipice of, you know, Big Ten, maybe Pac-12, canceling the football season. Do you think that what the players have done here has actually given presidents pause? And do you think there's any possible different outcome this week?
Well, it seems like something has happened, right? Like, we went from talk of outright postponement to maybe pushback or delay is the last reporting I'm hearing as it pertains to the Pac-12 and the Big Ten that seem like they're going to be the first decision makers in this process. The ACC seems a little more adamant that they're going to go on and play in a lot of this. And so maybe it's had some effect there. Like, it seems like in this situation, and I don't know if this is across the board, but in a lot of instances, these presidents that are coming over and getting ready to make the decision, these boards that we know govern so much of what happens on a lot of these college campuses, are a little late to the party on this, right? Most of the plans up until this point for season and for all the protocol on campus has been made by the medical boards, athletic directors, and these groups that have been a little more hands-on in the process. And so maybe in seeing this, you know, crazy blowback from players, coaches, and everyone around really fighting hard to try and make this happen, maybe it's made them stop one last time in this and try and figure out, is there a way we can delay further? Because that's really what this comes down to, is do we think buying ourselves a month, 2 months more of time somehow is going to make a market difference when it comes to our ability to provide more readily available and uniform testing across the board, to provide, you know, equal or close to equal safety parameters for all the Power 5 teams, because that's what a lot of the ask is now in a lot of this. Does 2 months buy us that, or is that going to take us all circling the wagons and trying to wait till the spring?
Well, and does any of that change what I still believe is a fundamental thing here, which is liability, Mike? I mean, you still have, you know, the potential down the road for class action lawsuits. You have the potential. We're seeing more and more some college football players reporting heart issues. Guys who have recovered from COVID-19. I mean, what out there takes that away other than some sort of collectively bargained agreement, which, as we know, can't really happen with college athletes?
Yeah, very little. I was listening to Jay Billis talk about this yesterday, and you're right. I guess the threat of a class action suit in the future is some of these unknown long-term effects for COVID are starting to be discussed more. Some myocarditis is the word that everyone is learning in the last few days here with the dealings going on with how this virus may affect the hearts even of young people in some of these instances. But I was listening to Jay Billis talk about this yesterday, and liability in individual situations he imagined would be a pretty difficult thing to prove. You know, was this caused, was my bout with COVID-19 caused directly by exposure related to my athletic time on campus? It'd be hard for a lot of people, I'd imagine, to be able to prove that definitely. And so that's certainly a threat, but I think as much as anything, it's certainly public perception as well. Can you afford to be, as we're seeing other conferences, you know, start to fold up shop and say that they're going to postpone, levels where the money is less of the driving force and all of that, can you afford the perception and the optics if you're a university president who's supposed to stand as this beacon of academia and your mission is supposed to be to educate young people coming there, but all these rest of these institutions that aren't making multi-millions, in some case billions dollars off of football, are folding up shop, and now all of a sudden you have kids get sick, you have something happen long term. That's a direct reflection of your commitment to that mission statement, that maybe now all of a sudden the people that, you know, are in charge of business on the other side of campus, maybe the people that are boosters and donors, look at it in a little bit of a different way. It seems like to me it would be more of a cosmetic thing than maybe true legal action being an easy and readily available thing here.
And again, Mike Kolick Jr., ESPN, joining us on Morning Drive. Mike, looking at this too, and you've touched on it a little bit, and we've discussed this plenty, and so many people have, that we're seeing so many times where a plan probably could have been in place in a lot of ways for this, looking back into early summer and the spring even as well, and we're seeing a lot of things that seem like it's last minute where things are just being thrown in. What does this show now with players stepping up and having a voice, showing some lack of leadership or collective leadership from some of these conferences and just the NCAA in general?
Yeah, I mean, the NCAA, like, we almost have to separate them. They've been their own, like, it's pathetic. Like, honestly, you wanted the dictionary definition of cowardice. A group that's willing to come in and punish and legislate in so many other ways, forms, and fashion. Tell colleges all the things that they can and can't do in these spots. But then when it's time to display any actual gumption, just punch the ball repeatedly back into the hands of the school. And that's not to say that this situation isn't difficult, and it's not to say that there is something to be said about the regionality of college sports and how difficult it is, because we know states and the way that this has been handled federally make it very difficult to legislate one thing across the board in all this. But for the Power Five leadership, I am a bit disappointed that there wasn't more of an ability to cooperate here and use all these resources. There wasn't more of an ability to have something in place across the board that would have ensured, hey, we can make use of the gross amount of resources, money, time, and effort, and all the medical information and personnel that we've got here in a shared pool of knowledge that would give all of us a better chance. But instead, really, I mean, you look back to once the Big Ten decided to go rogue on its conference schedules, although I'm not going to blame them entirely, but it didn't help in creating this idea of, all right, well, we've seen how you are going to operate, and so now all the rest of the conferences are going to make sure we take care of us and ours first and foremost. And if anyone else gets anything out of it, that's just a clever, you know, and convenient byproduct in all this. So, yeah, extremely disappointed in leadership across the board. I think you've heard players kind of reflect that as well, that why has it taken us speaking up and trying to basically hold you guys accountable for you to do anything resembling that? And that should, you know, that should be case enough for the Power Five leadership to do some serious self-scout when this is all done, because we would all like to see them break away and form something new and separate from the NCAA that's far outstayed its welcome here. But if the Power Five is not going to display better leadership, then what hope do we have that that situation would really be much better?
Yeah, actually actively seeking out player input before all this might be one idea. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, Mike, name, image, likeness. I mean, meanwhile, you know, NCAA leadership is still fighting to limit that as much as possible. You know, I mean, so...
That part's laughable, because they've been doing that amidst the pandemic too. Like, you're wasting resources trying to fight that during this, while instead, like you said, if you had engaged players in any meaningful way throughout this, because that's been the chief discomfort in a lot of this. That's the rub in college sports, is if you just admitted they were different and treated them and engaged them as such, you could get a lot more done. If you admitted that these weren't just normal students here going to class who happen to play football while they're there and make millions of dollars for the university, then you could do things like separate them and bubble them on campus. Maybe have them take online classes there so that they can be in as close to a bubble environment that, by the way, we've seen work in athletics in other fields, these bubbles. Now, obviously, they would still be traveling. It wouldn't be a true bubble in that, but at the very least, these schools, these administrations have displayed at the highest levels, when we're talking about schools with a ton of money and resources, a pretty solid ability to test, monitor, track, and overall keep athletes safe while they're on campus in a very specific location. And so many people referencing this idea that, well, the athletes are safer on campus, we need to let them play. They're safer on campus now when no students are there. Let's wait and see what happens when the general student populations come back, because most of these universities aren't willing to admit they're different. And so they're going to be out there going to class, living in dorms more than likely with the regular student population, exposing the risk that wouldn't need to be there if you just treated them like what they are, kind of, you know, pseudo employees of the university and people that are definitely not just normal students.
And Mike, before we have to let you go, you have a new show coming up. Tell people what to expect from it and how they can participate in it.
Absolutely. Yeah, today Angola Junior is going to start Monday, August 17th, 4 to 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio. And we're looking forward to it. I mean, what a unique background that we've got to tap into with Janae. She's a former number one overall pick. She's a current WNBA All-Star. She opted out of the bubble this year, but, like, she's still very much in the game. So I feel like the cool part of having two former college athletes that get to man the helm on one show is we get to take all those conversations we were having in locker rooms and just throw them right out on national airwaves. And we get to involve other people in it. We get to get big names in sports and our friends all involved. So we really want it to be a group experience. We want it to be fun for everyone and understand that we're legitimately two people that I can say our friends, have been for a few years, and now somehow get to do a radio show together. So it should be a pretty good time.
Absolutely. Looking forward to listening to it. And thank you so much again, Mike, for taking the time to speak with us today.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Mike Golic Jr., ESPN, new show coming up August 17th. So strong opinions there as well. Makes a lot of sense. And so we're going to discuss a little bit of that and more. Recap what's going on with college football, where it stands, if there's any new news, what leagues are still going, what we think might happen, what we think we're going to hear happen today. And more. Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. And welcome back to Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson taking care of us behind the glass. Just heard the clip from Paul Feinbaum, especially what we've been focusing on as well as the heart condition caused, especially what the Big Ten is focusing on there too. And it's been curious to see some of the stuff that's come back on this as well. Adam Rittenberg with some of his tweets as well. This one from, late last night. Talked with many longtime Big Ten folks tonight who note that unity is a central tenet. This is a league where Ohio State shares revenue equally with Indiana, Northwestern, Purdue. Critical early moment for Kevin Warren's tenure to find better consensus. Today was not a good day, but also not sharing information. That they're saying medical experts are saying this, but they're not conversing with other conferences, other universities necessarily, keeping it all in, even with Golic Jr. last segment saying that there's the leadership there just hasn't been there. They're going on it alone, and the Big Ten started that on going on it alone.
Yeah, no, the Big Ten. I mean, that's I think they surprised people, angered people in other leagues, and I think that's deserved. I mean, the absolute lack of people working together here is one of many things that I think has been laid bare for everyone. Meanwhile, a couple quick things on Twitter because it's just. Things are changing every month. Bill Landis, who covers Ohio State for us for The Athletic, says they are practicing today. So, you know, some schools, actually, I think Mel Tucker at Michigan State switched yesterday to a day off. Cause it's like, so you're going to tell these guys the season's over? Oh, we have no idea what's going to happen. We have no idea. Will you play in the spring? We'll try. Sure. And then, meanwhile, they're going to be on the practice field? And, you know, I'm going to put them through drills and everything. So, but Ohio State practicing today, does that mean something? I don't know. Dennis Dodd tweets that two sources in the TV rights industry tell him it's doubtful Nebraska could go free agent for a season. The rights to Nebraska games, which the rights to Big Ten games, owned by Big Ten Network, ESPN, Fox. And that's another interesting thing here is, you know, TV people saying, no, you are playing in our league. We own your rights. I mean, again, the entire economic, you look at the money here, that's at stake. And it's big money, and we think of the people getting rich off it. It's also athletic department employees who don't make a ton, who work their butts off, or coaches of non-revenue sports who work their butts off, and it's their life passion, and their sport's just about to get wiped away. There's a lot to it. And then you go to the television control over college athletics. And again, you look at that with the optics of – these are just amateurs.
Just.
Yeah.
Yeah, just amateurs.
Just amateur college students, student athletes. The whole thing is being exposed. And I think it's just the question now, Justin, is just can something in a real short period of time change fundamentally to make this happen? Because I remain not optimistic that college football is happening this fall.
Not this fall. And that's where wording is going to be very interesting to see when press releases start coming out. Are they going to try for spring? Are they just canceling it outright? Because a lot of messaging we're seeing with different things is we're postponing. And postpone just gives you time to hopefully come up with a better plan than what you had.
Right. Or hope other people out there do exactly. Things that help you.
Rapid testing, things of that sort that help make it a better environment that's more suitable to this being able to take place. Something out there.
No more postpone. COVID parties on COVID buses or whatever. You know, stuff like that.
Stuff like that. So postponement gives that optimism, at least, that little sense of hope to everyone, whether it's people affected economically, to fans, to the athletes themselves, a little bit of hope when you say postponement. Now, Nicole Auerbach, The Athletic, put out an article where she interviewed Old Dominion Athletic Director Wood Selig, and he just said, I think it's going to be for naught. Not that they were bad exercises, but what's that saying? The coronavirus is still undefeated, if you want to use a sports analogy. Until there's a vaccine, I think it's going to remain undefeated. We have to be honest about our opponent here and make the tough but wise decision for everyone's safety and health.
Of course, again, that's a school in Middle Tennessee's league. So
yes. Middle Tennessee is still expecting to play.
Middle Tennessee announced a game against Army yesterday for September 4th or 5th. So you're seeing again, we're just talking about Nebraska breaking free. And maybe we will see just random schools, random leagues playing and others not. I have a hard time if the Big Ten does this. I have a hard time. I mean, so much of the sport now, if you want to just talk about the football alone, just separate the football. The entire sport now, for most of our lives, it was more, you have leagues play, and then the leagues will play in a certain bowl game, and then writers will vote on who the national champion is, and it was a little more. But now, the entire sport is geared toward this playoff. I mean, it's all about who makes the playoff. It's all about this four-team tournament to win a national championship, which is obviously very exclusive. But if you split things up and you have the SEC and ACC and Big 12 play this fall, Big Ten and Pac-12 don't, what does that mean for your very, very valuable, very lucrative college football playoff?
More money lost and then money earned by certain people too. I mean, it all comes down to money, right?
But so does that continues to function with half the Power Five playing?
In some form or fashion, people are going to eat it up.
If the Big Ten says, hey, Ohio State, we're going to play in the spring. We've got a schedule in February. I mean, you get the SEC win, Alabama or Georgia wins the SEC championship, and hey, hold tight, keep as much of your team together as you can. I know like nine guys are just going to be ready for the draft, but you're playing in the semifinals in May against Ohio State.
Yeah, and is the NFL going to adjust?
The NFL adjusting is another big, big possible storyline here if it gets to the spring. Because if the NFL doesn't adjust, you got a lot of guys who just aren't going to participate.
And another concern, and it's a concern of looking at potential guys that maybe were mid to late round picks and what they're projected to be, or guys that would have an opportunity to impress in their last year and not even know it's their last year too. Will general managers and scouts have enough information to make a pick? Will they have enough information to make a solid pick, say in the fourth round or fifth round of the NFL draft? Or is there something where they're just going to have to take a full-on risk? Obviously, that's a yes. There'll be risks taken. The first round, you have enough information for the most part on guys that would go in the first round, right? I mean, you know Trevor Lawrence,
right,
and what he's capable of doing. He could sit out this year and not play, and you know he's going to get picked. There's plenty of players that are like that. But you have other guys that could absolutely be impact players or make a difference or make a team and have a living as a professional athlete, maybe get lost. Gets lost because maybe they didn't play their senior season where they would have made a huge impact. They go, you know what, that guy would be great on our special teams. yeah, he's not going to be a star, but he's going to be able to make a living playing the sport that he loves.
Yeah.
He has a skill at.
I mean, a 21-year-old can make a huge improvement from one year to the next, and that's I'm actually going to do something, I think, this week on that idea of how many guys would think they need to put things on film, because what you have a lot of times with even fringe prospects is, you know, they will set it up whether they get their degrees or they might come back and get them later, but the spring semester for any kind of NFL prospect is you're not taking classes, you're not on campus, you are in Florida or California or Arizona having signed with an agent, and you're working out and getting ready for the combine. You hope to get invited to the combine. Some of those guys don't, and they still do this. And you hope to get to a Senior Bowl or one of those games like that, East-West Shrine. So that is how players do it. So now, how many of those people are like, you know what, it's better for me to actually play in the spring and put it on film and show I'm a better football player? And I know GMs would prefer that. But then so the NFL would say what? The combine's in February. So – if the, you know, I think I would assume the NFL would ultimately comply with this and would switch. I mean, this is their free feeder system. And so many of these general managers, if they had a vote, they're saying, yes, I want the film. I want the game film of this season to make my picks. Yeah, we all know who the first round guys are or whatever it is, whatever the cutoff is. But I think personnel people would say, we need this football to be played and these kids to be encouraged to, like, yeah, play this season because it could help you. I have a hard time believing. I know the NFL hasn't said much. I have a hard time believing that they would not ultimately move. If not, that's ultimate arrogance right there.
Absolutely. Flexibility is going to be key for all these leagues when you look at it, whenever their drafts are, because everything's shifting. Maybe think about, look at what the NHL's had to shift with their draft going into October when the seasons are usually starting. And junior hockey's getting ready to start. College hockey's start. It's supposed to be starting right there. Same thing in terms of looking at NBA. Everything could get shifted. If you start bumping these seasons around, you're going to have to shift things. You have to be flexible.
Like, if you're the NFL and you get Saturdays and you get to put your TV product all over Saturday now, that, you know, pay them back by moving your draft back.
There, that's a good way to look at it. And so we've discussed a little bit of the economic impact of a potential cancellation. Let's dive more into that, how it could affect schools, how it could affect people, how it can affect college towns, because we all know money plays a big role in this as well for what these cities experience on college game days and what it means for businesses there. Up next, Morning Drive, Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson behind the glass, and continuing our conversation with college football, the economic impact of this. And we discussed this a little bit with the mega conference discussion on the spending there, but the economy in terms of what college football means to certain cities as well. And we look at this, the country in general, a lot of these big colleges are in towns that depend on that university. And not just saying college football, they depend on the university as part of the economy when it comes to restaurants, hotels, travel, all these different types of things. I start thinking of, well, one thing is like South Bend, Indiana, Ann Arbor, Eugene, Oregon. It's not necessarily a big city. Like, Tennessee is located in at least a metropolitan city with Knoxville.
Yeah, like same with Ohio State.
Right.
Like Columbus is a big city on its own, but yeah, so many of these places. And still, Knoxville. You want to talk about the Knoxville economy, how dependent it is on those football
weekends?
Absolutely. I mean,
Clemson.
It's a big part of it. Sure.
Clemson, South Carolina. I mean, State College, Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah.
So Iowa City, Iowa. Just throwing it right there, too. I mean, they depend on so much with these game days. And, yeah, it's only a few days out of the year, but the millions of dollars generated on those days that help support the university back from just tickets, sales, concessions, parking, people making a living, charging for parking in a lot of these places to pay their rent or to pay their mortgage or whatnot. Businesses as well, for when it comes to food sales, hotels, when people are traveling to this. I mean, it's a trickle-down thing of if one thing cancels, it's going to affect so many other things that we've learned through this pandemic of how one thing directly affects another, which continues on with the domino directly affecting another thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So much affected by this. Now, I will say, like when the Fairfield, the price gouging with hotels, you know, Fairfield hit you for like $450 a night in Bloomington, Indiana on a football weekend. Yeah, that's a little much. But yes, yeah, so many people, and some of these businesses are sustained for a year, you know, because of 7 or 8 weekends. I mean, that's, or largely, you know, that is a huge part of their year. So I will say too, though, Justin, this is where this fall season, if it happens in some of these conferences, if things just totally reverse course in the Big Ten, and let's say they have, you still are going to have a very diminished situation if you have no or very low count of fans. I still think you'll have people gathering at bars. You'll have tailgating to some extent. But if you don't have those full numbers and you have a lot of people who aren't comfortable being in, in crowds, then you're so that could be a case made for the spring. Although, again, you're still – that's just hoping. It's still a hope that this and this and this happens. But, I mean, it's more likely – months from now than it is right now. We know where we are now. It's potentially better for these towns. Now, you're taking a bath in the fall, but if you did have those weekends, let's say you had those weekends in February, March, April, which would be wild, but you had full weekends. Let's say it could get to the point where you had close, you know, half full or more than that stadiums, and you had just things were better for whatever reason with COVID, that you could have a better hotel, restaurant, bar attendance, and ultimately the bottom line for all those weekends would be better than the bottom line for those weekends in the fall. I mean, that is a case to be made for the spring. Again, the problem with that is we don't know. We don't know what it's going to look like. But like Dabo Swinney, again, I keep bringing him up, saying like, oh, it's not going to be any different in the spring. Like, you don't know that. You can't possibly claim to know that. We go back and look at some of the other stuff he said about this. Like, he was so sure this and this were going to happen. Just let's all realize that we are on a ride right now. We don't know where it's going.
So looking at this and how much in terms of a budget for a university comes from athletics, huge portions of the revenue, right? So, for instance, this is on Guardian. More than $100 million of the Penn State Athletics Department's $164.5 million operating revenue came from football during the 18-19 fiscal year. That's according to the NCAA financial report. Nearly $37 million came from ticket sales for games at the 106,000-seat stadium. In Georgia, even bigger, $123 million out of this total sports revenue of $174. Home game ticket sales totaling $34.6 million. So colleges obviously depend on this as well. And it's just bringing this up to relate to how big this is for universities and the future. A lot of these universities, there's no doubt in my mind, we've seen it before, there's going to be some schools that obviously are cutting programs, and some schools may not be able to survive it. There's just some programs that will not be able to survive it as well, and that's not this is why they need to play or this is why they don't need to play. For me, it's you just need to realize how big of an impact this is and why everything should be discussed seriously, because it's impacting so many people. People are being affected by all this.
No doubt.
So much. And people and money are obviously very important. Safety is important. The money is important for coming into this because, like you even said, a few weekends out of a year can sustain a business. There's a lot of businesses that survive just on the holiday season in December. They can be open all year round, but December is their month where they're making bank, and that's how they survive as a business. They'll continue to run in the spring and non-holiday parts, but December's what keeps them going. There's just so many businesses like that that depend on the revenue that come in on certain parts of the year, and fall for a lot of these cities is how they survive the rest of the year, is by having a little bit of revenue, or most of the revenue come in a little bit of time. Yeah. And it's just kind of getting at the brevity of the situation of why it's such a big deal for all this. And again, that's not making a case for why they need to play or why fans need to be in the stands. It's just making sure people understand the huge impact this is having on people.
Right. And you can take it to the larger discussion. It's the two things being true at once. The virus has killed a lot of people. It's deadly. It's infectious. It's to be taken seriously. It's not to be blown off. Also, when you shut the economy down, what that does to people in terms of depression, what that does to people financially, what that does to people in terms of addiction and alcoholism. I mean, it's all to be taken seriously. It's not one or the other.
Right. Absolutely.
And so together, these things are two things that have to be important. And again, so if we were in a better situation in society, then sports would be happening. I know that New Zealand is a hard comparison to our country and the challenges and the size and the geography and all that, but New Zealand has no virus right now. Yeah. They got rid of it. They have sports with packed stands. Sports should be, and I've seen, I don't know where this quote originally came from, but it's a reward for a functioning society. It's also something that you can do in these bubbles, as we've seen. It's been, I didn't know. I wasn't sure that the NHL and NBA, like I was like, the NBA, yeah, but they're still in Orlando, and if Florida's having a rough time, will it work? It's working like a charm. I mean, it's zero. Zeros across the board for them. So
it's fenced up. You're not getting in. You're not going out.
Yeah. But again, so college football. The NFL is going to be interesting. See, you hit some numbers there, Justin, that show you college football and that economy are still – it's a lot on the attendance, the ticket sales.
Absolutely.
Because you actually can still sell at, you know, Ann Arbor, Ohio State, Knoxville, you know, Penn State. You got these places that you can sell 100,000-plus tickets and people will buy them and show up. The NFL economic model is much more – on the television product.
Absolutely.
College is still very dependent on those crowds. It's a different economic model. So it's more of a hit to have, like, the NFL will be fine if they have this season. The cap's still going down, revenue's going down, but if they have this season, they have the television product, they're going to be just fine.
And merch sales to go along with that too, I'm sure.
Right. All the things that go along with it, the NFL is, you know, the NFL, you know, it's live sports in general, crowds are going down, but still in college football, you have these places that have just these massive crowds, even though everything's on television now.
Yeah.
It's getting more challenging to get those places filled.
But it's a social experience.
It's a social experience. It's the band. It's the cheer. It's the pageantry of the sport is like nothing else.
Because they feel connected, part of a community. You have the current students, you have alums, you have fans in that city, you have fans nationwide. Very different than NFL overall, because yeah, you have fans that live in different cities, but overall it's about based on that market, and that's where the fans are. Whereas in college football, they're spread throughout. When you have alumni bases that are just tremendously huge all across the world, still supporting those programs,
right? It's tribal in college football. It is
exactly,
you know?
Exactly what it is.
So then you think about the impact. Who gets impacted? You know, you got some pay cuts. You got some. You know, some pay reductions for some people and things. You've had furloughs, but who's really going to get hit? You're going to see administrators, again, coaches of these non-revenue sports. You're going to be sports wiped away. You're going to see positions wiped away. People who don't make a ton of money who are going to suffer for this. So that's another thing when people talk about college athletics and the optics of people making millions off these kids. I will say, too, there are a lot of people who aren't making millions but just have careers and jobs who are dependent on the economics of the sport too. And you do have to consider those people as well. They are being adversely affected right now. But again, if you just opened a market up, not an employee situation, not a true labor situation, but you open the market up for the kids to make money off what they're doing and you let them have a voice, maybe right now they could actually negotiate something where we could have football this fall.
Absolutely. So economic impact is huge. Switching gears up next, Daniel McFadden of NASCAR on NBC is going to join us. Back-to-back Michigan race of the weekend, the new choose rule going into the going out of the pits and after a caution, and preparing for Daytona Road Race this weekend. That's up next, Morning Drive. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexard, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin Bradford, Joe Rexard, Marquis Munson taking care of us. Now switch mode to NASCAR. It was a big weekend in NASCAR. Kevin Harvick obviously owning the weekend. We have Daniel McFadden of NASCAR and NBC joining us. Daniel, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me on, guys. First time. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. So let's look at this weekend, too. Does this weekend cement Kevin Harvick as just one of the best, and especially this season as one of those guys that's obviously favored? Because what a weekend for him.
Oh, no. He's definitely one of the favorites. This year. He solidified that he's the man to beat, at least at Michigan. He's now won four of the last five races at that 2 mile track. And yeah, he just absolutely dominated, won three of the four stages and had the car to beat, but, you know, barely held off his rival for this season, Denny Hamlin, by 0.093 seconds there at the finish. So, it was still interesting, even though Looking at the numbers, it looks like he just, you know, ran away with it. Mm-hmm. But it was a very entertaining weekend. It wasn't a ho-hum doubleheader weekend, which is just the second doubleheader weekend we've ever gotten in the Cup Series. Sure. When it comes to racing at one track in one weekend.
Absolutely. I mean, Kevin Harvick, 6 wins, Denny Hamlin with 5. What is it about Harvick so far this season that has made him so special? It's just they have a great car going for them. What has made him be the top of the line right now?
Part of it is that car. That car he raced this weekend, he's only raced it 3 times this year, and he's won in all 3 races with it, including the Brickyard 400 and the 2 races this weekend. But him and Rodney Childress, his crew chief, are just the class of – they've been the class of the field, really, for, like, the last 3 years. I mean, they have almost 18 wins together in that time. And it's Harvick's experience. He's 44 years old, and he's performing pretty much the best that he has in a 20-year career in the Cup Series. But yeah, right now it's Harvick, it's Hamlin, and you know Brad Keselowski is like a distant third, but he's there.
And one thing we saw during this race was code words. Eric Almirola with code words saying hot dog in the that's not the right one. What is the meaning behind these? I'm sure the meaning is they don't want other crew chiefs to hear what's going on. But it shows the importance of communication between teams. I'm sure when things were getting started, just what was that whole situation like as you were taking it in?
Code words are fairly common. And right there with that music, miscommunication with his crew chief. Hot dog was meant for him to come into the pit, but he either didn't hear the code word or just got confused, and so he stayed out. And it actually kind of benefited him for a little bit. He got the lead over Harvick, and he actually got to hold off Harvick on older tires. But, the code words, you'll see Brad Keselowski do that over – over the years, he's, you know, his crew's been overheard saying, this will be a Miller Lite pit stop or something like that. So sometimes the code words are related to sponsors, and like Almirola, hot dog is related to Smithfield, which makes, you know, produce meat and sells meat. So it is very important. You don't want your other teams to know what your strategy is going to be, whether you're going to take 2 tires, 4 tires, fuel only. So any advantage you can get, you'll take. So it's a very there's lots of games being played over team radios over the course of a race.
Yeah, it reminds me, especially in football, we see these big signs get held up on the sidelines of logos or cartoons.
Yeah.
people trying to decipher that. So one of the big things we saw, because we saw it in the All-Star race at Bristol, but the choose rule coming in, and for folks that don't know what that is, the final lap of the caution before the restart, having to choose the inside or the outside, and it looked like it made the race a lot more exciting and putting a lot of risk-reward on the drivers and their teams on choosing what they're going to do with this, and it turned into some exciting racing as well. What are your thoughts on that choose rule and being implemented in the middle of the season like this and just how it turned out?
When the first murmurs of the choose rule being brought or the campaigning to bring it up to the Cup level started, I questioned it because I was kind of confused by it. But now that it's been used, I get it. And I like it. It made Saturday's race very interesting. It for my money, it made that race the most entertaining and interesting Michigan race in years. I don't know whether it was the combination of that, the shortened race, another one thing that I've thought Michigan races needed to be shortened for a long time. The combination of those two things, the package, whatever, it worked. It gives drivers who are slightly farther back from the front a chance to compete for the lead. We saw Chase Elliott do it once Saturday. Mm-hmm. He went from, like, I believe fifth when they were single file to, you know, first on the inside row, second place. And he took the lead from Harvick, and he held it for, I believe, 9 laps until there was a caution. So it has the potential to change, to be a game changer within a race, that you to change a narrative that just wouldn't have happened otherwise. Like we saw Bubba Wallace slowly work his way up to the front, partially thanks to the choose rule. He restarted second on the inside row, in the second row at one point, and made a daring move to the outside to try to challenge for the lead, and it didn't quite work, and he fell back. But Bubba Wallace wouldn't have had that chance without the choose rule.
Absolutely right. As again, Danny McFadden joining us from NASCAR on NBC. And looking at the playoff race here, it is a big playoff race. Some names that are just outside that playoff bubble. Young guy like Tyler Reddick, who has been pretty hot and fun to watch. And you have the veteran like Jimmy Johnson just sitting outside. Do you think it's a possibility either those two make it in, or is it pretty set right now?
Ask me again after this weekend. ask me again after turn one of the Daytona Road Course. Because this weekend is such a curveball. It is such a wild card. It's a circuit that, for the most part, most of the field has not competed on. And if they have, it's been years. Some of them have competed on it in the Rolex 24 race there. Kyle Busch did back in January. But some of them haven't competed on it since there was an IROC race there back in, like, the late 2000s, mid-2000s. And they're not practicing. There's no qualifying. It's get in the car, do your pace laps, green flag drop, and hold your breath.
For a road race, especially.
A road race, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is not like the Roval of 2 years ago. 2 years ago, they got multiple practice sessions, and then they went, and it was a pretty uneventful, first stage. They kind of knew what they were dealing with, but that's not going to be the case now. And you're also throwing in a chicane, a brand new chicane on that course coming out of turn four, which they implemented because of speed concerns. They come out of the bus stop on the backstretch, and then they just go full bore through turns three and four on the oval. Then you go through the tri-oval, and then you have to slow down from nearly 200 miles per hour going into turn one. So that's why they were introducing that chicane. So, and no one's going to have any practice with that. So I wish they were practicing. They're not. And it's going to be probably the most interesting first lap that we've seen in NASCAR, maybe in my time covering the sport.
Well, I'll be looking at your Twitter then to see what you say after turn one to see who you predict is going to make the playoffs. I think it'll be so interesting. Well, Daniel, appreciate the time and talking to us and just giving us a little bit of more NASCAR talk here on 102.5 The Game.
Thanks, guys. And you guys can watch NBC's coverage of the races, Xfinity and Cup, this weekend on NBCSN. The Cup race will start at 3 p.m. Eastern on NBCSN.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Daniel. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you, guys. Glad to be here.
All right, Daniel McFadden, NASCAR on NBC, covers the sport there, and I'm very interested to see what happens there. Joe, you covered some races at Michigan Speedway before, right?
Absolutely. The Kevin Harvick, that's one of those sobering details, his age, because actually I wrote a piece about the young guns, including him, at Michigan. So I'm trying to remember what year that would have been, but so you're talking like, whew. Yeah, so he was 20-something then. That was the youth movement in NASCAR. But, yeah, the scene there, for anyone who hasn't been to a NASCAR race, it is really unlike anything else. And pretty incredible stuff. And that sport, as far as availability, and I know at the time, and it's been a long time for me, but among the best – out there in terms of, come to the garage and hang out and talk and be open, and which is something all sports should aspire to be like.
Go figure, my first race trying to go to last year was at Talladega, and then it got rain delayed after stage one.
Oh, man.
And had to go home because I had to work the next day. So I wasn't even able to finish my first race.
So you got there. You got some of the experience.
Yeah, one stage of experience. and it hooked me. It hooked me even more. It made me want to go to more races to experience it. And I was like, oh, this is going to be great. And then a pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to switch back to NHL. Scott Wheeler of The Athletic is going to join us to talk about the NHL Draft Lottery, what we could look at for the Nashville Predators to pick in the draft, picking 11th. Up next, Morning Drive, Justin Bradford, Joe Rexroad, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.